So let's get started. This is the second presentation of this track, and it's 30 minutes of the talk. After this presentation, we will take a 10 minutes short break, and then everyone will get together for the final summary panel. Okay? So I just want to remind everyone, the break after this presentation is going to be a short one, only 10 minutes. It's not like the regular coffee break yesterday, the day before. Okay? So now it's my honor to introduce you Jason Sun. He is the Accredited Testing and Evaluation Division of LADOS Laboratory Manager, and his primary responsibility is for the 5140-2 validation and the TÜV certification. His talk will be joined by Michael Powers, and he is a security assurance engineer working for the LADOS AT&E labs. He's responsible for performing FIPS 140, FIPS 201, and SCAP validations. Please join me in welcoming Jason and Michael.
Thanks everybody for coming out. Today we're going to be talking about FIPS 202, which is a new SHA-3 standard. This was introduced last summer, and then a few months after that, it became officially a FIPS-approved algorithm after it was added to FIPS Annex A. And so today, the whole point of this talk is really just to go over a little bit over on the overview of some of the hashing algorithms that were available in FIPS before the SHA-3 came out, and then some of the problems that had arisen out of that, and then we go into SHA-3 and talk a little bit of the pros and cons about SHA-3, and then finally we end off on some of maybe our recommendations as to what you should do with SHA-3 in terms of from a module implementer standpoint, and also for a federal end user standpoint. So before we get into talking about the different SHA algorithms, first, just a little bit of an intro to hashing algorithms. So what is a hashing algorithm? Well, Wikipedia defines a hashing function as just any kind of function that's used to map data of arbitrary size to data of a fixed size. And so hashing algorithms, one of the things you're going to want to look for is something that it's obviously going to be a one-way function, so you can't calculate from the hash and get the original message. And also, one of the properties is that having a small change in the message is going to equal a big change in the hash. So hashing algorithms are kind of considered really like a backbone of a lot of the crypto algorithms and protocols that we use today. As you can see, hash algorithms are used as a primitive for a lot of different algorithms that we use in FIPS validated crypto modules, such as HMAC for message integrity and authentication. It's also used standalone for message fingerprinting and data corruption detection. It can also be used within the context of digital signatures. It can be used as a conditioning component for entropy. And it's also used as a primitive for SP198. DRBGs, and also for key derivation functions as well. So when designing a hash function, there's many security properties that you're looking out of it to consider it a secure hash function. And three of the main ones that you're going to be looking for are collision resistance, pre-image resistance, and second pre-image resistance. So collision resistance just basically means that there's a low probability that you're going to find two different messages that hash the same exact value. Pre-image resistance just means that given a certain hash value, it's difficult to backtrack and calculate the original message. And finally, second pre-image resistance means that given a certain message, it's difficult to find another message in which both of the messages hash to the same exact value. And as you know, collision resistance and pre-image resistance, they're quite similar. And if you have collision resistance, it kind of implies that you also have second pre-image resistance. Uh, So first, we'll get into a little bit about some of the hashing algorithms that were available, SHA algorithms that were available before the advent of SHA-3. Originally, we had something what we call SHA-0. That was introduced in the original publication of FIPS Pub 180 back in 1993. It was designed by the NSA. And the hash output length of SHA-0 was 160 bits, so that equated out to be 80 bits of theoretical security strength. Some cryptanalysts found that the complexity of actually finding a collision of SHA-0 was actually in the range of about 2 to the 33.6 operations. So on a kind of an average PC, it would take about an hour to find a collision. And based off of that, it's no longer considered collision resistant, and it's no longer considered second pre-image resistant. And also, this algorithm is just no longer approved or allowed for any kind of usage in a security relevant context. Then came SHA-1. This was introduced in the revised publication of FIPS Pub 180-1 back in 1995. SHA-1 wasn't really a new algorithm per se. It was really based off of the SHA-0 algorithm with the tiny fix that the NSA introduced, in which a single bit rise rotation was added to the compression function. And similarly to SHA-0, it also had an output length of 160 bits, so 80 bits of theoretical security strength. Later on, it was shown to have a complexity of finding a collision to be in the range of about 2 to 61 operations. So a lot better than SHA-0, but at the same time, a lot less than the theoretical maximum strength as well of 80 bits of security. So today, we don't really consider it collision resistant and second pre-image resistant as well. Interesting enough, earlier this year, back at the RSA conference, Adi Shamir actually mentioned that a man named Mark Stevens is working on a SHA-1 collision, and he was quoted of saying that they should be able to find a collision in the next few months. As of today, we haven't really heard back from them about that, but I'm sure they're still working hard at that. And SHA-1 now, as per SP100-131A, it's marked as disallowed or legacy use for digital signatures, as it's just not able to provide an adequate amount of security strength anymore. And so SHA-2 was introduced. That was back in 2001, and it was introduced in a revised publication of FIPS Pub 180-2. And this new standard introduced three new hashing algorithms, SHA-256, SHA-384, and SHA-512. Later on, some new variants, SHA-224, 512/224, and 512/256 were introduced to the standard as well. Again, these algorithms were designed by the NSA. And as of now, there's no currently known attacks on the collision resistance or pre-image resistance for the full round of these SHA-2 functions. There have been some weaknesses found in the reduced bound variants. Having said that, it is vulnerable to length extension attacks. Basically, what that entails is that if you were to use the algorithm incorrectly and try to use it as some kind of macking algorithm instead, so we have an example would be if you try to calculate the digest of some kind of secret key prepended to the message, what would result is that some attacker, even though they wouldn't know the value of that secret key, they would still be able to calculate some kind of valid digest just by appending their additional data to the end of it. And so this type of attack, you know, that's only if you misuse SHA. So that's why we have algorithms like HMAC expressly for this kind of purpose. So SHA-0, SHA-1, and SHA-2, they're different algorithms, but they're all built around the same kind of design paradigm. They all implement this Merkle dam guard construction. And so what basically happens is that they all work kind of the same way, in which your input message is split up into n blocks of size of 512 bits or 1024 bits, depending on the hashing algorithm that you're using. And at the end, there's also some kind of padding to the end to make sure that it hits the 512 blocks or 1024 bits length. And so what happens is that the first message block gets fed into some kind of compression function along with some kind of IV value. And that just gets passed on to the compression function again with the next block, and so on and so on and so on, until you hit some kind of finalization stage. And after that, that's when you arrive at your final hash. So is there a problem with that? So as I just said, the same construction is used in SHA-0, SHA-1, and SHA-2. So what that could potentially mean is that if you discover some kind of attack against one of the algorithms, say SHA-1, then theoretically it's also possible to apply that same exact attack to SHA-2 as well. So what do we do about that? This is actually something that was concerned to NIST a few years ago, and so they decided to open up a new competition to be able to find a new kind of hashing algorithm that was dissimilar from the existing SHA algorithms.
And that's basically where SHA-3 came in. So that was back in, late 2008 was when the competition started. That's when, basically your entries had to be made. And there were three rounds to this competition. It started off with 51 first round entries to the NIST hash function competition. Then it was narrowed down in round two to 14 entries, down to 5 entries. You can see the other 4 names listed up there. And then finally, the last round, Ketchik was chosen as the winner of the SHA-3 competition. And I guess those are the designer names. I guess one notable name there is Joan Damon, who was a co-designer of AES, was one of the designers of the SHA-3 primitive. So I guess after SHA-3 was released in public, made into a publication in August 2015, NIST has gone on to announce possible extensions to the SHA-3 standard. Some of the ones they mentioned in their talks were, I guess, KMAC, which is basically like HMAC except more efficient. So if you noted in Jason's slide, HMAC has 2 nested SHAs, where KMAC, due to the fact that basically SHA-3 is not vulnerable to that same length extension attack, you can do a more efficient construction, maybe only involving 1 iteration of the hash function. There's also this idea of XMAC, which is very similar to KMAC, except it's using these new shake extendable output functions, which I'll be going over shortly. XKDF, which is a KDF based on XMAC, used in a similar context to SP800108 KDFs. Tuple hash, which is basically a hashing algorithm designed around hashing strings together rather than, I guess, hashing raw binary data. Fast parallel hashing, which would basically be a SHA-3 variant that's designed to utilize multi-cores, since most systems these days have many cores. And then also, I guess, the original Ketchik specification outlined a way you can use it for authenticated encryption. So you could use SHA-3 in a similar fashion to like AES, GCM, or CCM. And I guess based on our understanding of SHA-3, we made a list of pros. So first one here is that unlike the previous SHA algorithms, SHA-3 does not utilize Merkle-Damgard construction, but it has this new construction, the sponge construction, which I'll go over on the next slide. And that's part of the reason it was chosen. Basically, it's like vastly different from SHA-1 and SHA-2. And the point here being that if a break is found in SHA-2, it's probably not going to apply to SHA-3 and vice versa. So it's just basically redundancy. It's not vulnerable to length extension attacks. And if you look at the SHA-3 standard, actually for longer messages, it has improved second pre-image resistance compared to SHA-256 and SHA-512. Or at least that's theoretical second pre-image resistance. And unlike the previous SHA algorithms, SHA-3 was chosen in an open competition fashion rather than just designed by a single agency. This is kind of what the sponge construction looks like. So you got R and C parameters, which is basically the rate and the capacity of the sponge. The left half up here is the absorbing stage, where you're taking the input plain text, or basically your message split into chunks, similar to Markle Damgard, except once you've absorbed the message, then you are basically outputting chunks of the state in chunks of like R length. So unlike in SHAs 0, 1, and 2, you're outputting like the entire state of the SHA algorithm when you're producing your digest. In this case, you're actually just outputting like a small chunk of the state, and then you apply the F transformation to it, and then output another chunk. And the point of this is that you're not revealing the entire state of your hashing algorithm. And in addition, this can be basically used as a stream cipher, so you can just keep outputting at like, you know, a non-deterministic length there. So we have, I guess, a couple additional pros here. All the SHA-3 functions are based on a single Ketchik primitive, and you're basically just tweaking those to the C and R values that you saw in the previous slide. It's trivial to extend, so like let's say quantum computers become a thing and all symmetric algorithms, including hashing functions, are effectively like cut in half for security strength. They could very easily produce a SHA-3 1024 variant to take that into account. And I had some speculation was that since they're so similar, maybe it will reduce the number of required power on self-tests. So like maybe you only need one self-test because across the board it's just different parameters being passed to the same Ketchik primitive. They have these new extendable output functions, which basically is just like a SHA algorithm, except you can define it to produce a variable length output. So if you, for some reason, needed a hash that was 250 bits in length, you could use SHAKE-128 or SHAKE-256 to produce one of those. And it's anticipated to be about 4 times faster in hardware than SHA-2. I guess emphasis that it's faster in hardware, not necessarily software. So I guess getting onto some cons here, as mentioned, it's anticipated to be, and I guess found during the competition, to be about 2 times slower than the equivalent SHA-2 algorithms. It hasn't gone through as much public vetting as SHA-2 has. And it's unclear right now what the timelines are of these being incorporated, I guess, into the higher level algorithms. So during the lab manager meeting, it was mentioned specifically that it was going to be incorporated at least in the CAS, RSA, DSA, and ECDSA, but it's not 100% clear if it's going to be incorporated into all of them, and if you're an implementer, what you should proceed with, like, you know, to add to your product. And similarly, timelines weren't really provided for those other potential publications, which were, I guess, what I went over earlier. So now we're going to look specifically at the SHAKE algorithms. So SHAKE algorithms actually have a property called related outputs, where basically if you were using SHAKE to produce, let's say, a 128-bit digest, and then you use it with the same key material to produce a 256-bit digest, it's basically just a truncated version. Like it's acting like a stream cipher, basically, which this is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just maybe unexpected, because maybe looking at like traditional hash functions, you might look at like, oh, SHA-256 is not just a truncated version of SHA-512. So this might, you know, cause some potential issues if people don't know how to use them properly. For SHAKE, there were also, I guess, additional standards that would incorporate SHAKE algorithms, and no timelines were really provided for those. And also, I was just comparing, since SHAKE algorithms seem to behave similar to stream ciphers, as I was mentioning. I compared it to, I guess, some popular mainstream stream ciphers like Cha-Cha-20s in a bunch of popular libraries these days, and that gets about 3.91 cycles per byte, whereas SHA-128, which is like the weaker of the two, is 9.5 cycles per byte. So maybe the intent is when they release the stream cipher version of SHA-3 that they'll like reduce the capacity or something to make it faster. But it's unclear at this point what the plans are for that. So I guess I'll move on to recommendations. I'll start off with for implementers and then move on to the federal customers. Just as a note, these are like mine and Jason's personal recommendations and not really like representative of Leidos as a whole. Recommendation is that if you do currently utilize SHA-1 or SHA-2 in your module, go ahead and implement SHA-3 kind of as like an alternative. This is just for improved redundancy. So like, let's say a break did occur in SHA-2, at least you'd have SHA-3 as a backup, if SHA-3 breaks, then you still have SHA-2. And similarly, for any higher level algorithms that testing is available for, go ahead and implement those. Right now, you can test basically just the SHA-3 shake primitives as well as HMAC SHA-3. But I guess as the CAVP releases more testing, just go ahead and implement those where you can to get that increased level of redundancy. Please ensure that you implement self-tests for each of the variants that you implement. So right now, NIST doesn't actually have like specific guidance for SHA-3 self-tests like they do for like SHA-2. So you can just assume that you would need a known answer test for every variant that you implement for the time being until, you know, perhaps a future implementation guidance is released. And then for SHA-128 and SHA-256, the standard didn't really give clear ideas of how those were intended to be used. So for right now, I'd recommend generally just not using them in a security relevant fashion until it's clear like what their intended use case is, because it looks like basically they were planning to incorporate these into like a KDF in the future. So I guess stay tuned on those. And then for federal customers, we just have a few recommendations. Is basically if you're choosing between a module that supports just SHA-2 and a module that supports both SHA-2 and SHA-3, give preference to the one that supports both, just for, again, the redundancy purposes. And then I had basically a caveat saying don't give preference to modules that support SHA-3 but not SHA-2. Like SHA-3 shouldn't be considered kind of like anything special just because 3 is a higher number than 2. And it's not necessarily indicative that it's stronger or anything. It's basically the possibility still exists that SHA-3 could be broken before SHA-2 is. So, you know, don't give SHA-3 by itself any special preference. I guess that's the end of our talk. If anyone has questions.
This is a small one. I'd like to disabuse anybody of the notion that SHA-3 is smaller in hardware, faster in hardware, sorry. There are more gate operations done, and when you map it to hardware, you map those gate operations to physical gates, and there's simply more of them done. You can do a longer or bigger round function, but you can unroll SHA, right? And if you unroll SHA by the non-integer level, it would be take to match that in the amount of gunk you have in the middle in a SHA-3 implementation, you'd find SHA-2 was faster. Right. So there's more going on. You need more hardware to go at the same speed. But it's the simple fact of its internal block structure means the natural size to build it is a bit faster than the natural size to build a SHA-1 or a SHA-2.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I wasn't aware of that. So thanks for clarifying.
One comment I wanted to, a couple comments I want to make. First of all, the FIPS 202 standard does give the SHA-3 hash, and then it also gives the shake algorithm. And the shake algorithm is not a hash algorithm. So I just want to make it clear that you can't use the shake algorithm as a hash. It's not a hash. Mm-hmm. So that's why so don't use it like that. It's an engine, and you know, this came out, and really people are saying, what do you use the shake for? And right now, nothing. But it is like the engine or the precursor to all those other things that you had listed there, the Macs and everything that are going to be using that Ketchik engine thing. Okay, so that's its purpose, and it'll be clear as time goes on. Also, the SHA and the SHA-3, anywhere in the standards where it says use an approved hashing algorithm, well, now we've got SHA-3. So that is an approved hashing algorithm that you can use anywhere that it says approved hash algorithm. I think in some of the, I know we've been doing a little, there's been conversations where it's like, well, in the 186-4, it says something about you use any approved hash algorithm, and then it says like the 180 series, and so the 180, did I have the right number?
Yeah.
And so, but they've said, oops, that was a little. We shouldn't have said that because now we have the 202, which is an approved hash. So it still means it can be 202 as well. Okay. So and HMAC SHA-3 testing is available. I'm the program manager, or whatever, of the cryptographic algorithm validation program, and I did just get the HMAC SHA-3. Testing out just like a week ago. So I just want to let you know that is out there.
Yeah.
So, all right, thank you.
Okay, 1 minute, any more questions? If we don't, then let's thank our speakers, Jason and Mike. So just a reminder, this break is a short one, 10 minutes, and we will gather together for the final panel discussion.
Yes, well.